Coming up next on the Witness the World podcast, living with an open heart.
I believe that we're here to grow. We're here to grow. And the only way to grow is to get uncomfortable to, I mean, obviously with my work is to process things that you don't want to feel, things that you don't feel comfortable facing. But in all, you know, whether it's your mindset, work, career, or whatever, that's the only way to grow. And I feel that when you can live on your edge like that, you're really living. You feel alive, don't you? Because you're growing. And growing is really the only sign of life.
The Witness the World podcast represents the personal views of the host and guests at the time of recording. These views may change over time. The content here is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Any content here should not be construed as financial, medical, or any other type of professional advice. Please consult with a qualified practitioner should you require any professional advice. Welcome to episode 12 of the Witness the World podcast. My name is Ben Choi, and today we'll be heading to the United Arab Emirates. Our guest is a holistic therapist that uses a number of different modalities to help heal people from their past trauma so they can live a free and fulfilling life. Her expertise is rooted from a difficult childhood where she battled many forms of abuse, self-destructive behaviors, and toxic relationships. But she now uses these experiences to help others and lead them on a path to finding their true self. Today, we'll learn about her journey and explore some ideas and approaches on how we can all strive to live with an open heart. Melanie Oliver, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Ben, and thank you for reaching out and connecting and, you know, giving me this platform to share my message.
Excellent. Yeah, it's great having you on. So, Melanie, I thought we would start off by asking a little bit about what it's like living in the United Arab Emirates. I've never been there myself, and I know probably a lot of our listeners here probably haven't been there either. So I wonder if we could just kind of pick your brain on, you know, what are the great things about the UAE, you know, some of the challenges that they are dealing with, and perhaps, you know, what you like most about the country.
Sure. Yeah. Well, firstly, I grew up here. So my family moved here when I was five. So I was here when it wasn't on the map. Let's say now everybody knows where Dubai is. But it's a very comfortable lifestyle, I guess. It's very easy, you know, obviously sunny all year, which I love. Sometimes in the summer, obviously, it gets a bit hot. But overall, it's just a very comfortable lifestyle. I love the lifestyle here. Yeah.
In a lot of countries, we are challenged with different things like inflation and, you know, shortages on goods. And, you know, there's in certain other countries, like the freedom, like to do what we want, say what we want. How would you say that kind of relates to the UAE? You have pretty much the freedom to do what you want, and you guys are not challenged with too much right now?
I mean, I did notice inflation go up here. That's for sure. We do get affected. I also noticed some shortages, like with food, certain foods that are imported and things like that. So we are affected by things, but I wouldn't say it was to the point where, you know, we couldn't access food or we couldn't, you know, live or something like that. It was doable. With regards to freedom of speech, we don't quite have that 100% here. But it's something that I'm used to, you know, growing up here. I'm used to the laws, and it's a Muslim country and all of that. So you do have to be careful in terms of what you say and things like that, especially on social media.
Thanks for that background, Melanie. So, talked about growing up, so let's take it from there. So, you grew up in the UAE, and I was listening to some of your other podcasts. You had a challenging childhood upbringing, kind of rolled into your early adult life, and this was like a struggle until you kind of work things through. So I wondered if you can just kind of share with our audience, maybe high level, yeah, that's just some of the challenges that you worked through, and yeah, just some of the things you did throughout your life and to your career now.
One of the things that I struggle with the most, I would say, is the feeling of not belonging. Because obviously, I'm not from here. My mother is Brazilian. I was born in Brazil, so was my brother at the time. And, we spent the first 5 years, well, I was the first 5 years of my life there, and then we moved here. My father's British, but then we never really, I only went to we used to spend summers there, but then I only really lived there at uni when I went to uni. So I always struggled growing up here with a sense of where am I from? And I remember that bothered me for a very long time, and not having any roots anywhere, not feeling that sense of belonging. And then obviously with I had a lot of childhood traumas, mainly from my mother's side. Like I had a pretty well I was abused basically by my mother, and I had a lot of challenges with her growing up, which led to my basically self-sabotaging patterns and drug addiction and just self-destruction basically. I was on the road. I always say I was on the road to self-destruction. And yeah, I felt alone. I suffered with depression. I remember I started cutting myself when I was like 13, 14. I became a goth, basically. I went into the dark side, you can say, and just, a lot of dark thoughts. And I struggled a lot. Yeah. And not having anyone to speak to about it here, not feeling comfortable or feeling safe, I guess, talking about, especially all the troubles that I was going with my mother, and not really understanding, because at the end of the day, my parents also did everything for us. We went to the best schools here. We had food on the table. I did after school activities and things like that. So I was very confused about, what was really going on, if that makes sense. And it was only much later when I started my healing journey that I started to obviously understand how that was about, how that had affected me and why I started to suffer from all these negative patterns.
At what point did you kind of, I guess, start this, like, you realize that you were starting this healing journey? Like, did you seek out some help? And, like, how did that process kind of get kickstarted for yourself?
It actually started with my grandmother and my aunts, because they saw that I was dressing like a goth and was really, self-destructive. And they used to take me to these centers in Brazil. There are spiritual centers where you can go get your energy cleansed, and you can speak to psychic doctors. And they could see that there was obviously something, let's say, wrong with me, or that I was disturbed. And in Brazil, like their philosophy behind that was that I was, I had a lot of negative spirits and things like that. So that was sort of their approach. It wasn't really anything to do with my mother, even though they were also witnesses to the abuse, but that was kind of like dismissed. So that was the start of it, actually, going to these spiritual centers and having energy cleanses all the time, doing these rituals. I remember my grandmother, sorry, taking me to these witch doctors, and they would give you rituals to do, and you'd have to go buy all the plants and then do certain rituals at certain days and times. So it was more of a spiritual approach to it. And, I guess psychologically, I felt maybe a little bit better, but nothing really changed. I think it was just like in the moment, at least I'm being helped or something. It gave me a little bit of hope in that moment, but actually looking back, nothing actually changed after that. So that was kind of like the beginning of it.
Okay, so that was the beginning to get you kickstarted. And did you seek other type of help to, I guess, crystallize, you know, your healing and get the bulk of it done. From what I understand, yeah, you had to see a couple different practitioners before you kind of settled on like, hey, you know, I'm really making big time progress in there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I always say I spent 10 years, on the spiritual path and nothing changed. And after 10 years of trying absolutely everything, I felt more lost than when I started. And I remember when I was, and around then I started to get interested in the occult and, all this energy stuff, because that's what I was being taught. This is all energy, this is spiritual. So I got into Reiki. I studied Reiki, and when I was 18, I started to get into mediumship and all this kind of stuff around that age. And my mother started to hold, I mean, in English it's called seances, but it's not the same as what you see in the movies. It's more of it's a philosophy. It's spiritualism in Brazil, in Portuguese, and you pray, and then it's a whole thing. So I did start to get into that early on. And then I decided to study holistic and complementary therapies at university. So that went on into more natural medicine. So I studied aromatherapy. I studied, shiatsu. I studied environmental stress. I studied craniosacral therapy. And so again, it was more natural and energetic approaches to healing. But again, nothing was really changing. It gave me a little bit of like a band-aid in the moment. But the patterns kept repeating themselves. And it was only really after uni, I continued my studies. I studied NLP. I became an NLP practitioner. I studied hypnotherapy, became a hypnotherapy practitioner. Then I went on to study all sorts of other sort of healing modalities. And again, what I was finding is that nothing was really changing. And it was only until I noticed that, the pattern was really emotional. And it was emotions that was keeping me stuck in these patterns. Things just started to come together in the sense that I started to focus on emotions, basically, and how to feel my emotions and process my emotions. And I remember that it was when I first started to do inner child work and really accessing, the wounds from my childhood and release it, that's when things started to change. So it was a long journey. And it was frustrating because no one in this, in the new age stuff, doing energy healing and all that, no one was really telling me the right path or how to, that I need to process my emotions or that I need to focus on this. It was all kind of like a little band-aid here and there. Nothing was really working to break the pattern. Everything that I did, I felt that there was something missing, and I felt like there was a little, it was just a little band-aid to sort of cover you up for now. And then 4 months later, you're back with depression and this and suicidal ideation and repeating, getting triggered. And there were a couple of people that sort of pinpointed that to me, like much later on in my journey. And when they said that, that's when I then started to focus on inner child healing and processing my emotions from childhood.
Okay, so you kind of came across some people that kind of spoke to the root issues to help you pattern break, and then after some more time of work, then it kind of
Correct.
cl clicked in, right? Okay, gotcha. So with this healing practice that you do, I guess, was it like a natural fit? That's why you decided to take it up. You invested so much time learning about yourself and how to go, work all those things through. Did you find like maybe because I had all that knowledge, maybe put it into use? Was that the idea behind getting into this field?
Well, I studied at university, and I remember like just before uni, I didn't actually know what to study. I applied for everything. I applied for psychology, I applied for sports, something or other, and then I applied for hotel management. And when I got the results, I actually didn't know what I wanted to do at that time. So I took a gap year. And in the gap year, I started to learn. That's where I learned Reiki, and I learned Thai massage, and I learned Thai herbal massage, and I was looking at herbs and Ayurveda, and I started looking at natural stuff. I remember I started yoga for the first time. I don't do yoga now, but I started it then. And so what intrigued me was like there are natural ways to heal, and that was kind of like what led me to studying holistic therapies. I realized that actually I really enjoy this. Like I like natural, having this natural approach to healing. And I really believed at the time that I mean, I still do, that the cure is in nature, you know, and I believe in having this more natural lifestyle. And that was kind of my thinking back then. I didn't realize that it was in my emotions.
Great. Yeah, thanks for filling us in on that, Melanie. So I got a question for you with as someone that has, dabbled with all sorts of different modalities, healing approaches. So kind of think to myself, utilize a lot of different practitioners for my, sports injuries over the years and different things. And I find that isn't necessarily like, the perfect, I guess, practitioner. Sometimes you have to go through, a few different practitioners, but then if you find one, the right one, you can actually accelerate your healing a lot more. I guess the work you do is like emotional trauma and healing. I also kind of notice, and this is my question to you, is like for practitioners that have actually experienced, their treatment area. So in your case, it's like emotional healing. They've gone through the rigors of, the challenges of your childhood. That makes that practitioner a lot better suited, I feel like, to, provide that another level that I think is really valuable and kind of accelerates the healing for their respective clients. So, it's not to say that someone that has, done all the studying and not experienced trauma it aren't good, but I think there's another level that someone like yourself brings to the practice. Would you say that's fair to say with everything you've been through and what you're doing and how you're helping your clients and their feedback?
Yeah, 100%. And there's a number of reasons. One is because I've experienced it, I know exactly what they're going through. And so, firstly, I know how to guide them out of that black hole, you know, out of the depression, out of the whatever pattern that they're in. Second, the client feels understood. And it's a comment that I get a lot. From clients that come to me who perhaps have worked with someone who hasn't done their inner work. Like I can just say one word to them and they get into tears because they feel heard, they feel understood, and they feel that heart-to-heart connection. And that's emotional. It can only come with emotion. It's not an intellectual connection. And because I've healed to a certain point and I've embodied those truths, I can then pass it on emotionally to the client. It's an emotional transference of truth and healing rather than intellectual theory, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. So I guess we got a great follow-up question here for you on that. So we're talking emotional transference and just emotional healing. And, today, when you go to around the world, people go to school to work on their IQ kind of piece, but no one really works on the EQ or the emotional intelligence. So when you're growing up in, elementary school, like high school, university. From, my own experience, seeing people go through things. I mean, yeah, you can have people study all sorts of things, be really smart, but if you don't have that work done with your EQ and emotional side of things, I honestly don't think it matters, how much, studies, how many degrees you have there, because you're going to be stuck with your emotions, running the course of your life for you. And it could be like for years where you're kind of going in circles and cycles. So I'm just wondering, like, how big a gap would you say there is, like, in our education, in our own learning, that people don't work on the EQ side of things? That's such a big thing, would you say?
Oh my God, it's huge. I know that now they are starting with kindergarten and, you know, like with teaching little kids about emotions. But even like I've found, and even people that, you know, study emotional intelligence, what I have found, it's all been intellectual. And you can't study emotional intel. I mean, you can have all the theory and use all the right words, but the actual work is emotional. So until you actually do the emotional work, people, at least clients, like we're talking about emotional transference, they won't get that if you don't do the emotional work. So yeah, there's a huge gap. I'm hoping that this will change because to me, this is the most essential life skill. I believe that we're here on earth to evolve as souls and to learn about our emotions. I believe that emotions is the language of the soul. That's the only way in which we grow and evolve, is by processing and feeling our emotions. And it's just, yeah, people are not really teaching it, or if they are, like I said, a lot of it is intellectual and not actually teaching them how to feel, like through the body somatically, and releasing their emotions, which is sad, really, because that's what creates a lot of issues now, like people that suffer with depression, with anxiety, and even a lot of health conditions, I believe, is a result of suppressed emotions, not forgiving, holding on to resentment, and whatever, you know. It's sad, but yeah, I hope that this changes sometime in the future.
I hear you, Melanie. Yeah, thanks for sharing that there. So yeah, you know, it's funny, I can relate to that. You know, years ago, starting some new jobs, totally different than what you're doing before, like there's anxiety. And as that anxiety grows, sometimes it creates like little stress balls in your stomach. So I'm a big believer that, yeah, the mind is the driver of, I guess, your life and well-being. It starts there. So doing the work there can really, you know, create a lot of benefits for you. And you know, you don't have to waste a lot of time dealing with these challenges, and you can move yourself a lot forward by, you know, working on your mind, and it should be like an ongoing thing. I think that's what I've learned. So
totally. And just as you were speaking, I remembered a client of mine who, she was the CEO of a big bank, and she came to me because she kept reacting to certain situations. This is just an example, and this was a typical, and she said, I feel like a five-year-old every time this happens. And this, to me, my alarm bells, like, you know, inner child, you know, childhood trauma. And every time I tried to take her, and no matter how much I explained, she would go into her mind and say, no, my IQ is blah, 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 blah. And she said, I make millions for the banks. I don't have any inner child wounds. And it was just such a big disconnect. And it's sad, because then you will react like a child in certain situations. And like you said, it will run your life and maybe ruin your relationships and your life as well. So it doesn't matter what your IQ is, this is my point, or how much theory you have in your mind, like your emotions. Yeah, they're more important to develop so that you can heal and live with an open heart, and not let your emotions, at least not let your emotional wounds ruin your relationships and run your life, basically.
Makes sense. Yeah, thanks, Melanie. So yeah, you were talking about that client of yours. So yeah, just let's touch into that a little bit more here. So yeah, we were talking that you have experience in dealing with all different modalities. And when I was looking at the list of your specialized skills there, I saw these things called NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, hypnotherapy, I read about this thing called feng shui. So just wondering,
yeah,
like,
yeah, I forgot about that.
I wonder if you can touch a little bit about like your process when you work with a client, and then like just through listening to them and their challenges, do you kind of tap into these different things to help them because it's best suited for them? Or just wondering, yeah, what if you can give us a little overview of those three and maybe some of the other modalities you use.
Sure, yeah. So right now I actually don't use any of that. So I've kind of thrown everything away. I no longer believe in, and I'm talking about emotional trauma here. I understand that sort of, you know, doing a meditation or doing NLP and things can be a tool, and it's nice for some things, but I don't believe it actually heals emotional trauma, because emotions have to be felt. You can't do it through the mind. So I don't actually use a lot of the tools that I learned. Even energy healing, it's mainly through talking, and maybe I'll do a guided, you know, meditation or something like that. But a lot of the times it's really to help them understand their emotions first and foremost. And I find that a lot of people don't understand their emotions. You know, they don't even understand why they're angry, for example. And just as an example, you know, if you don't understand why you're angry, then how are you going to actually process that anger? How are you going to work through it? So a lot of it is teaching and guiding based on the work that I've done and helping them understand their reactions, their motives, their justifications for certain behaviors or reacting in certain ways. And then working with those emotions to help them feel that emotion so that they can release it. And yeah, sometimes it's just talking, sometimes it's guided meditation, sometimes it's somatic work. Sometimes it's very confrontational. I confront them with certain truths. It just depends. I work very much intuitively. I feel into what they need. And yeah, and like I said, what I find is that a lot of the times they don't have the right perception of what is really happening in terms of, why they're triggered. And just having that awareness, they can have massive breakthroughs. From me just sharing from my perspective, what I see or what I'm feeling. So yeah, I work very much intuitively. I don't particularly use any tools. It's more about them understanding their own emotions. And the only thing that I do help them is to develop their will. I teach my clients to develop their will because I find that people who have had a lot of trauma, they don't have a will. They've had their will broken, more often than not. And so through the sessions, through the coaching, I guide them to develop that will so that we can reclaim their power, reclaim their will, their essence, and start to heal that way.
Thanks for sharing, Melanie. So, would you say like all those other types of modalities, do they have a place, or you found that it was good background info, but it's just that you chose, your intuitive approach as the way to go? But then for other people, could they respond well to those other approaches, and then people should just kind of roll with that? Just wondering, yeah, what's your take, just based on your experience?
Sure. For me personally, they don't have a place anymore in my own work that I do now. But I find that sometimes clients who are still, they still need a tool, they still need something that they can sort of hold on to because they haven't yet learned how to do the work within. They're still looking for something outside of themselves. So I do provide some tools like EFT is a great example, emotional freedom technique. And one of the reasons why I like EFT in particular is that because you're embracing the emotion, you're working with the emotion rather than trying to fight it. And so that's a tool that I sometimes give clients and teach them if they still need a tool, to use. Sometimes I do give clients a meditation, but I would give them, for example, what I call the body awareness meditation is to reconnect to the body because you need to be in your body to process emotions. So yeah, there are tools that you can use, but eventually you won't need any tools. Eventually, it's about using your will and desire to feel emotions and to process them because this is, the power of our soul. You just need to have the desire and use your will to feel and to face these things, and it will naturally sort of come up and release itself if you have the desire and the humility to face, whatever it is that you need to face.
Yeah, great. Yeah, thanks, Melanie. So I heard a lot about building your will, and I guess that's you could also say it's like your resilience and your, they call it intestinal fortitude and self-esteem. So people that have been through trauma, as I've understand my own personal experience, you have to kind of build yourself back up if you went all the way down to the ground or underground. That's kind of what you're doing, right? Because people that have been through trauma, they're coming at a level that is below the ground almost. And you just kind of show them that, hey, you know what? You are worth something. You are valued. And I guess you are loved. That's one of your biggest themes.
100%. And it takes time. It's obviously not going to happen overnight. And every time you heal a trauma, every time you especially I'm talking about childhood trauma, one of those core childhood wounds, you reclaim a little bit more of your soul. And you're reclaiming your will along the way, and you develop that. And it's the process of individuation, right? Because a lot of the times also they're still enmeshed, with their family, and often the families are very toxic, and it's really about reclaiming their will and individuating from the toxic family system.
So thanks again, Melanie, for sharing your insights. And I'd like to pivot to some of the different topics and themes that you share in your social media videos now. I think there's a lot of good points, and I think it'd be great for us to unpack some of them now. So first one I got on my list, it goes like this. Anger is exposing your unhealed emotional wounds. You talked a little bit about that. So I wonder if you can just dive in and just go over that one a little bit more.
Yeah, I also wrote a blog many, many years ago called, I think I wrote, it was called Why Anger Management Doesn't Work. And anger is known as a secondary emotion in psychology. It's not. So whenever you get angry, you just need to realize that that is not the root cause. And very often, you're not angry about the situation. It's something that's triggered within you from an unhealed wound from the past. So it can either be an unmet childhood need, which very often it is, which stems from childhood trauma, childhood wounds. When you have a wound like that is not healed, you then project it out, obviously, into the world, and you want those needs met. And when they're not met, just like they weren't met in your childhood, you get angry. But yeah, what you need to realize is it's whatever you're angry about, that's not the root cause. That's a symptom. It's just showing you. And the key to the anger, especially adult anger, because it's something also called childhood anger in terms of when you're processing childhood wounds, which I believe is real anger. When we get angry as an adult, very often it's because of something else. These are just addictive anger. It's because our addictions are not met, our childhood needs are not being met. So we get angry, or we have some sort of unloving expectation that is not met, and then you get angry. So anger is not the real issue. The key is to find out the justification for the anger. So let's say you're angry because that person didn't respect you. Then you need to feel how much you want to be respected. It's normally like the opposite. And once you really feel that, very often the deeper emotional wound will come up, and then there'll be deep grief about not being respected in your childhood, or maybe it's not being heard or not being seen or whatever it is. What I've found is that adult anger is just based on emotional addictions that are not being met, which is linked to childhood needs that were not met. So basically, in other words, your childhood needs that were not met, which is an emotional trauma, turns into emotional addictions as an adult. And when these emotional addictions are not met, very often you get angry, if that makes sense.
Interesting. No, that makes total sense. So now that we understand the roots a little bit, I'd like to ask you an interesting question here. So there's people, as let's say adults or even as kids, when they have this saying like, I see red everywhere and I just can't, bring myself down. And they're just in this zone and they're just hyper-focused, like it kind of goes on for a little while, for some people longer than others. Yeah. And just through your work and what you've seen, what you experienced, like, what's the best way for people to kind of bring themselves down? Or you see someone else kind of in that zone, like, how do you bring them down and to that recovery process? Because in the moment, it can be very challenging. I'm just wondering if you had any thoughts.
Yeah, like the person needs to want to, first of all, because if they don't want to, if they're so justified and they're not humble, like you need to have humility, and they need to have the desire to see themselves. Yeah. Because if they don't have that, there's nothing that you can do, really. But if you're humble in the moment, you can get angry, but in the moment is to own the anger. Like, this is my anger. It's not in that person. It's not in that person. It's in me. It's the first step is to really to have humility. That this anger is in me. There's something triggering in me. And very often with anger, we're so justified that they didn't hear me, that they didn't respect me, or their behavior is wrong. And the more that you justify the anger, the less likely you are going to process it. But yeah, humility is key. And to have the desire to feel it, to know that this is my anger, and to really, like I said, the key is to what is the reasoning? Find out the reasoning or the justification for the anger, and that will give you sort of the doorway in terms of how or what to process.
It sounds to me that the individual needs to take the first step. If they don't take that first step, cycle continues. No one else can really help out. I mean, you hear things that, oh, this person needs an intervention, but if they're not ready for that intervention, everybody's wasting their time. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I can give you some examples. I remember I was working with a client. This was many years ago, and I set a boundary with him. And he got so angry at me, and he was just lashed out at me, and just, and I stood my ground very lovingly. I'm not your mother, because he was projecting a lot of mother stuff onto me, and he couldn't see it. But 4 months later, he actually messaged me, and he asked if we could meet for a coffee, and he apologized. He saw he realized that what he was doing and what he was asking for actually was wrong. I all I did was set a boundary, and he just reacted in that way. But yeah, sometimes it takes time for people to see themselves.
Takes time for people to see themselves. I think that's a really good theme there, and everyone goes through that journey at different rates, different times, and okay, no, that's great. So let's move on to the next one I got here. So this one goes like this. Most people have a tendency to want the truth to feel good. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about that one.
Nice that you went to my Instagram and started looking at. I forget what I post half the Yeah, this is a big one, and I have other experiences with this as well. I think a lot of people want the truth to feel good initially, and when it doesn't, they get angry again. Right? And the only reason that it doesn't feel good is because they've been living a lie. So when the truth is told and goes against your beliefs, all the lies that you're living, that you believe is exposed, and so initially it hurts, but actually the truth always feels good. It's just that we're holding on to the lie. But when the truth and the lie comes together, I think, and you're resisting it, that's what I feel creates pain. And then people say, oh, the truth hurts. But actually it doesn't. It sets you free. The truth is a very loving thing.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And, further to that, I'm just kind of curious. It's like, what's your take on how society is? I mean, I think all these traumas, I mean, we can personally take accountability and work on them, but then also society, the social media, the news, all this kind of stuff kind of always talks about getting the going for the easy way out and trying not to make life so difficult. But I don't know, personally, I think it's good to do difficult things here and there to challenge yourself mentally, physically, emotionally. That makes you, more resilient when different things come up, random things happen in life and you can process them better. The real personal growth, it comes from, pushing through, doing uncomfortable things. And I wonder, like, is that something you've seen as well?
Yeah, 100%. I agree. If you're comfortable, then you're not going to change. And this is a big problem. We were just having this discussion last night, and I was about to post something on my story about that. What I've seen is that the people who are really comfortable, I mean, I say comfortable, but they're still stuck in patterns and whatever in their comfort zone, their uncomfortable comfort zone, they don't change until something drastic happens. And I don't believe that we're actually living unless you're at the edge, that you're always growing. And yeah, people just, I don't know if it's society's fault or, what is it, but they don't want to be on that edge. I personally do, especially when it comes to inner work. I love it. Maybe in the past, I've pushed myself too much. Now I'm kind of learning how to sort of not to do that and be a little bit more loving with myself, because before I was no, I have to do inner work. I have to do inner work, and constantly doing, having to do, pushing myself to do more. But yeah, I find that a lot of people don't want to go there, and then they wonder why they're not living their lives. It's strange. Why would you think that, if you don't want to get uncomfortable? I believe that we're here to grow. We're here to grow, and the only way to grow is to get uncomfortable. Obviously, with my work is to process things that you don't want to feel, things that you don't feel comfortable facing. But in all, whether it's your mindset, work, career, or whatever, that's the only way to grow. And I feel that when you can live on your edge like that, you're really living. You feel alive, don't you? Because you're growing, and growing is really the only sign of life.
Couldn't agree more,
Otherwise,
Melanie. Yeah.
you're dying,
Yeah,
aren't you? You're dying on the inside.
no, that's right. That's right. So, no, that's good insights there. So, thanks, Melanie. Next one I want to touch on goes like this. Forgiving people doesn't mean forgetting, but it means taking your personal power back. I think you touched a little bit on that, but if you can just kind of fill us in on your thought process on that one.
That one came actually from a client who I remember, because I'm very sensitive to people's emotions, especially their unconscious emotions. And we were working on relationship stuff and forgiving her ex. And she said, in the first within the first session, she's like, "Oh, I'm over it." I said, "That's not what I feel based on what you shared. I feel that there's still, a lot of anger there." And she's like, no, I've kind of, put it behind me." And then, I think it was like 3, 4 months later, she messaged me saying she's so angry at her ex. And I said, "Oh, I thought you'd forgiven him." And I think people have this idea that if you just forget about it, it goes away. But unless you process the emotion, it doesn't go away. And forgiveness is not about forgetting, because we're here to wake up, to become conscious. Right. And even with our traumas, people think that forgetting about it and pushing it aside, you're going to get over it. And it's complete opposite. It's about facing it and saying, "Yeah, I experienced this and it's okay." Or, "I experienced this and I'm at peace now." But what tends to happen is people associate forgetfulness or forgetting with "I've forgiven," but actually they have suppressed the wound. They have suppressed the emotion. And when you suppress an emotion, you actually cut off the memory from it as well, because memory and emotion are interlinked. And that's why a lot of people who experience childhood trauma, very often they don't remember a lot of their traumas. And sometimes when I work with clients, all of a sudden they'll start remembering and having all these memories about abuse and this and that. And it's because they've suppressed that memory. So that was kind of like my thought. My thinking pattern behind that post, like, forgiveness is not forgetting. Like, you will remember, but you'll be at peace with what happened.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And no, thanks for giving some background on that one. So I guess conceptually, I have a follow-up to that. Just curious, like with all the people you've worked through and your experiences, like would you say people ever get to a point where they are 100% healed from some different trauma aspect? Or do they get to a point where you're about 80% healed maybe because you can't forget what happened? It's a part of you, so it kind of defines who you are to a point, but you have got to the point where you've chosen that, okay, it's an experience. I've grown from that, but there's no such thing as 100% of everything. No such thing as perfect. I'm just wondering, conceptually, do you subscribe to that? Or it's like 80% healed, that's good, and you're the 80% rule that I kind of run with. And if you can get to that point, I think things are pretty good overall. What would you say to that?
Firstly, I do believe that you can heal 100%, but I'm not there yet. A lot of people that I worked with obviously are not there yet. But I do actually believe that we can do that, based on my experiences with healing emotional wounds. But we have a lot of them. We have a lot of wounds. I believe that we have maybe, a chunk of core emotional wounds, and everything else is just false beliefs and false unloving expectations that and addictions that we have to sort of work through. But yeah, but I'll take 80%. 80% is good, and you know, a work in progress. You know, I'm still a work in progress. But there does come a point when you've healed a good chunk of a lot of your core wounds. You do come to a much better place in terms of processing things and handling stress, not reacting, not getting triggered. And then it's more about, I believe, learning about love, developing in love, learning why we're here, God's laws. And yeah, that's kind of how I think, how I feel, what I believe, basically.
That's great, Melanie. So yeah, I'm a numbers guy, so I like to think in percentages here. So I guess one way to put it, let's say you talked about healing your core traumas. So let's say if the core was the 80%, we'll just say you heal the core, and then the 20% is like the day-to-day kind of stuff that comes up over time. Just wondering, like, yeah, once you've got to that 80%, it brings me to my next quote. Is that where you can say that you are living with an open heart? You mentioned that in some of your videos there, and that's the place you want to be, getting to the point where you heal the core, and then you can move forward in life, and life looks totally different once you get to that point.
100%, yeah. Because I truly believe that we are here to learn about love. That's actually what I believe. We're here on a soul journey to learn about love. Love is everything. It's the fundamental of our being, of our soul. Like, we're here to learn about love. And, you know, when you are in the state of love, you're living with an open heart, you know, and it's not about, and the only way to get there, obviously, is to first heal your wounds, right? not to hold on to those resentment and anger and whatever, because also then you're only hurting yourself. And then you're keeping yourself stuck in these patterns. And again, going back to what we were talking about before, that's when you truly start to live, because before that you're just in trauma response and you have all these limitations. And I'm not fully there yet, but I'm getting there. I'm always working on myself. That's sort of my goal, my aim, to really, you know, get there eventually.
Thanks, Melanie. I think that's a great place for us to wrap on. So as we kind of wind down the podcast, I always like to ask my guests in a two-parter question. So it goes like this. What are you most grateful for? And what are you most looking forward to in the future?
I am most grateful for finding God, actually. I had an incredible experience a few years ago, and I'm just so grateful that I found God, and that I feel like I found the truth, you know, about emotions. And I finally feel that I'm on the right path. Like, before, I was just on this new age stuff, and I just felt so lost, even though I was doing all this stuff. But yeah, I'm just so grateful that I found the path. and I'm looking forward to continuing this journey. I mean, I can't even imagine where I'll be when I'm really sort of living my life with a full-on open heart, and, you know, having more love. And yeah, I had a message recently from a friend of mine who does angel readings, and he said they're so excited about you, you know, that you have no idea what's coming. You're going to love it. So that kind of, that was exciting. So I'm excited to see, you know, what happens next in my life.
Thanks, Melanie. So if people want to know more about you, where can they find you?
All social media, the usual, you know, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, or you can just go to my website as well. It's Melanie with a Y, -oliver.com. And then all the social medias is just my name, Melanie.oliver. And you'll find me there.
Thanks, Melanie. We'll be sure to add those to our show notes. So that's a wrap for episode 12. Thanks for joining us, and namaste, everyone.